I'm Lise Doucette in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It's been around for half a century, quietly doing battle against diseases that can bring entire communities to their knees. Smallpox, polio, yellow fever. But this year it took a stand and roared. The whole world took notice. It had to. Suddenly the World Health Organization, the WHO, was taking on governments, issuing travel warnings about which countries we should stay away from to avoid the lethal SARS virus. We live in a globalized world where deadly diseases can span the world in hours. The WHO says it must take the lead. This by a UN agency long regarded as stodgy and bureaucratic. But its actions helped protect us from SARS, and they were revolutionary. Can we expect to see more from our global disease gatekeeper? The WHO's new director general is a former Korean doctor, Dr. Jong-wook Lee. He calls himself a doer, and he's a veteran in the fight against infectious diseases. So what will he do about the diseases which now cripple so many societies? AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis. And what about the ones we haven't seen yet? WHO's blunt warnings on SARS pushed China to do more to confront the disease. But countries like Canada were outraged when they were put on the list. Connection listeners, what do we expect from the WHO and Dr. Lee? He's spoken of his goal to eradicate polio. What should be the priorities of an agency perennially short of funds? Do you think the WHO, with its small budget and big bureaucracy, is and can be the one to respond? Our number, 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. We're very fortunate today because our special guest will be the WHO's Director General, Jong-wook Lee. He'll join us in just a moment from Geneva. But first, let's go to Charles Piller. He's the staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. He covered the SARS crisis and the WHO's leadership transition from the former Norwegian Prime Minister, Dr. Gro Harlem Brundtland, to Dr. Jong-wook Lee. Charles Piller, thank you very much for joining us on the line from Oakland, California.
Thanks for having me.
The last thing you want to be reminded of when you're at home in Oakland is about the SARS virus. But take us back to that time. Just how revolutionary was the WHO's response to this lethal virus?
Well, the WHO did something that UN agencies almost never do, and in fact is really unprecedented in the health realm. By issuing travel warnings against countries that had a SARS outbreak, significant SARS outbreak, the WHO caused genuine economic pain on their members. Now, they didn't just do this with permission of some council or of the individual member states. They did it on their own initiative. This is critical because in a fast-moving epidemic such as SARS, a deadly epidemic, they realized that they had no alternative but to pull out their biggest weapon, the weapon of isolation in an interconnected world, one that caused billions of dollars of damage to those economies, but forced recalcitrant governments to do everything that was necessary to shut down that epidemic. And it was a remarkably successful strategy for two reasons. One is that it demonstrably slowed and then ultimately helped contain the SARS virus. And second, this is a strategy that was later endorsed by the World Health Council, the governing body of WHO. So they now in the future have authorization to go forward in a similar fashion.
And do you think they will?
Well, I think it's almost inevitable that they'll need to. Not for many of the diseases that are current scourges in the world, like malaria or AIDS. Those are diseases that are not well suited to the kind of actions that WHO took during the SARS crisis. But as infectious disease experts have often warned, we're in a period where it's very likely that we'll see new emerging diseases year by year or decade by decade, perhaps similar to SARS, perhaps even more dangerous. And this is a tool that will be used in the future. The WHO has developed an increasingly sophisticated emergency alert and response network that is reasonably well equipped to identify these epidemics when they come up and to be able to respond. That's really in many ways how they were able to have the information they needed for the SARS crisis. And I think one thing that Dr. Lee promises to do, which is to send more people into the field, could be useful in increasing the effectiveness of that network, because of course in disease fighting, information is prevention, and they must have the information from people in the field to be able to do their job.
But can they really do that on such a, what is a relatively small budget, $1.1 billion, 60% of it from voluntary contributions?
No, I think they're going to need a lot of help. And in fact, even that budget has been painfully difficult for them to collect. Here we are in, at the end of July, they still had more than 80 of their member nations in arrears on their dues payments. So what we're talking about is a body that has the ability to advise, to warn, to inform, and to shame the world into doing what it needs to do on a variety of health problems. A great example, I think, of the inheritance that Dr. Lee has from his predecessor, Dr. Brundtland, is the tobacco treaty that the World Health Organization pushed through over the last year. This is also a unique action. It got its member organizations unanimously to agree to try to crack down on tobacco advertising, distribution, and smuggling worldwide. I mean, that's a pretty amazing accomplishment. Now, it's not the same as the force of law on individual member states, but it is an example that the organization is thinking creatively about how to tackle problems that seem intractable, and yet there could be new approaches to handling them. Basically, he's got a giant bureaucracy to work with, but it's not a bureaucracy that's as complacent as it was 5 years ago when Dr. Brundtland herself, quite a dynamo and someone who did great things for World Health, when she took over, this was an agency really in decline. And I think Dr. Lee has the opportunity to take an agency that's in an ascendancy and move it forward as well.
Well, let's hope. Well, in fact, we're going to find out now what he plans to do. Charles Piller, thank you very much for joining us from Oakland, California, staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. Well, he set the stage for us. He gave us a sense of what happened with the WHO, particularly over the past year, and gave us a sense of what Dr. Lee could now do. Dr. Lee joins us on the line from Geneva. Welcome, Dr. Jong-wook Lee, to The Connection.
Well, thank you very much.
I understand you're the first Korean to head a United Nations agency. How does that make you feel?
Well, feel a great responsibility to the world, the community, but also to Korea.
We want to know what drives you. Let's go back to those days when you decided to become a doctor. I'm afraid I read that you did it to impress the girls.
Oh, well, that was reported. But, you know, in those days, in the 60s, clearly my mother wanted me to go to medical school because she'd been through such an ups and downs, but difficult times, so that she felt that this is one sure, stable job.
And you...
And then I said, of course, you know, it will be also very prestigious to be a medical student.
I suppose that's the natural reaction of a mother. I heard that she said to you that whether there's peace or war, they will always need doctors. And you were a young child during the Korean War. I read a story about you when the war broke out at 6 years old, how far you had to walk. Do you remember that clearly?
Yes, that clearly, because I was only 5 years old. But, you know, it was one big family story. We talked again and again. And so, you know, simply you cannot forget about that.
Indeed.
But that was a very cold winter and in 1951, January. And then I had to work with my family, my younger brother and the elder sister and my mom had to work about 300 miles in 60 days. So that was really one experience you never forget.
You were a person which needed help in the international community, particularly the United States help. So your first lesson at 5 years old about how we do live in a global world and we need the help of others sometimes.
Yes, and then at the time that I heard about the UN, because at the time it was the 16 countries came to Korea and, under the flag of the United Nations. So that now I am the, not only UN staff, but one of the head of a big UN agency. So it is a really big turnaround.
And you became not just a doctor, but a doctor who first worked with what we'd have to say is one of the most difficult diseases for us to confront, leprosy.
Yes, there was because that was a very difficult disease, not medically, but also because of a social stigma attached to the disease. And I really felt bad to the people and the children of the patients. So as a student, I spent some time over the weekend changing bandages and so on, and I felt a great satisfaction for doing that.
How do you think it's prepared you for your job now at the head of the Global Health Agency?
Yes, in a sense that that prepared me for doing something more than a fee-for-service. The physician, I'm not against anybody for providing services and collecting fees, but clearly I was interested in doing something which majority of my colleagues would be interested in. So that led naturally to the WHO. And then I also was involved in polio eradication in the Western Pacific and then globally also for almost 8 years. And then, of course, I haven't treated any polio victims, but in a sense, we eliminated polio from the large section of the world, so that clearly rescued and benefited a great deal of a number of patients, the children. But the point is, they didn't know me, and I didn't. I haven't met them. So because in our success, we are not visible.
It's interesting how you basically started with the disease that everyone wanted to hide away. You know, I met lepers in Africa. They were in African villages and nobody really wanted to look at them in the broad light of day. Mm. And now, would one of your biggest challenges be the diseases we can't hide from, the diseases which go around the world? I'll tell you, today here in the United States, one of the big headlines is West Nile fever, the virus that's actually accelerating here in the United States. And a lot of the news programs are sort of giving people advice about how to deal with it. Fight the bite, try to get away from mosquitoes. Are you watching and hearing about this and trying to decide what you must do now as head of the WHO?
Well, clearly this is one of many new the emerging diseases. And then with the climate changes, with the mosquito behavior changes, clearly we have to be ready to deal with the diseases and the problems which you never imagined will occur in our garden.
Is this for you the biggest challenge? The most important thing?
Well, this is one of the challenges. Like SARS is another example. There was if you look at the past 30 years, every year there was at least one or two new or re-emerging diseases. So that, in a sense, that the SARS, of course, it was the first disease in the new century, but this will not be the last one. So that we have to be really prepared. And then, of course, you mentioned about the WHO's response. Clearly, often they mention that we spend a great deal of our money, $1 billion for the staff, but our asset is really our staff. Our staff is technical people, and then these are the people who will deal with these problems. So
they will be at the front line. Well, certainly we have to say that SARS put the WHO on the map. A lot of us now know a lot more about your organization. Connection listeners, what do you think about the WHO? Does it have an impact on your life? What do you think the priorities of the World Health Body should be? Call us here on The Connection, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Give us your questions for Dr. Jong-Wook Lee, the new Director General of the WHO, our global disease gatekeeper. We're focusing on the World Health Organization, the WHO, the new global disease gatekeeper. It went into the headlines when it took a strong stand on fighting the lethal SARS virus. Suddenly it was standing up and confronting governments, issuing travel advisories, telling us where we should go to avoid the disease. Do we expect this kind of activism from the global health body? What do you think the priorities of the global health organization should be? Our special guest today is the WHO's new director general, Dr. Jong-Wook Lee. He's a Korean doctor, the first Korean to head a UN agency. What's your question for him? Our number here is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Dr. Lee, if you were headed the WHO when the SARS virus first came to the agency's attention, would you have responded in the same way, telling China to do more, issuing these bold travel warnings?
Yes, of course, because we have a system, and clearly that I will also discuss with the same people that my predecessor discussed this issue with, and then I will not hesitate for one second before we issue the same guidelines and advice.
When you say yes, of course, was it really of course? What if there had been a more timid director general who didn't really want to take on the governments? Because it was a new approach by the WHO, wasn't it?
Clearly this is not a political issue, and by not issuing similar guidelines in a forthright manner, that actually this will become a global pandemic, so that we clearly know that what we are doing and what we are what we were talking about. So we, of course, this is an of course.
Do you think actually SARS is over? You were quoted as saying you'd like to develop a more specific and sensitive diagnostic tool. If, for example, SARS had happened in the winter, it would have been more difficult to distinguish between people who were coughing and had fever and those who had SARS, because it could have been something else, much less deadly.
Yes, yes, definitely. And so that we are developing the new diagnostic tools, sensitive tools, which will clearly help us identifying the disease, but also that we are right now working on building a more modern situation room where we can exchange information more quickly with the member state and other institutions.
But how do you possibly prepare for the diseases you don't know are around the corner? I mean, what kind of foundation do you have to build so that at least we have some kind of preparedness?
So that clearly that's a very good question, because we don't exactly know that what we will be dealing with. But we have to, in a sense, build a network which can pick up all the strange, the problems, disease outbreak, and of course the rumors. We have to collect this, we have to analyze it, we have to verify it, and then we have to take actions. So it's a huge work, and clearly that's what we are spending this money for.
Does it keep you awake at night?
Well, yes, with a jet lag and then, of
course. But do you think your experience as an Asian doctor means that you look for different things because you're in a part of the world which has been affected with different kinds of infectious disease, where the priorities may be different from, say, for example, a doctor who may come from a more prosperous European country?
Oh, well, yes, but I spent 10 years in Geneva, Switzerland, and 7 years in Manila, and 3 years in the Pacific island country, Fiji. And then before, I spent also 3 years in Hawaii. So in a sense, I covered from the most developed country to the developing world. And also, our training and the WHO's experience provide us an ability to deal with all these problems, whether it comes from the developed or developing countries.
Well, let's hear what some of our connection listeners expect from you. Ashlyn is on the line from Rocky Mount in North Carolina. Ashlyn, welcome to the program. What would you like to say about the WHO and to Dr. Lee?
Thank you. I think the way the WHO acted so quickly for the SARS is great, and I was glad to see an organization take charge like that. But there seems to be so much pressure on the U.S. to help with the outbreak of AIDS in Africa, which, you know, is definitely our responsibility to do if we have the... But what, if anything, is the WHO planning to do to try to curb that or educate or prevent, you know, spread or...
Good question, Ashlyn. Dr. Lee?
Yes, we are, of course, there has been a great deal of discussion in the past 20 years. And right now in the WHO, we are working on come up with a specific plan before the December 1st to put 3 million people on antiretroviral treatment program, mostly in the African programs. Of course, this will be costly. This will be a big challenge. But unless we tackle this problem in a very forceful manner, that I suspect nobody will really take this path. So
exactly.
That this is one concrete the plan we want to do.
Right. Thank you.
Ashlyn, what do you think they should do?
I don't know.
Because
really
it's something that you feel it is, you agree that with George Bush did put more money, do you think that is where the tax dollars should go?
Yeah, I do. I feel as if, any country that has a responsibility, that has the financial means or that has the technological means to try to help, I think should. But, you know, we need, just like the UN kind of heads up the military, you know, organizations for the whole world when the country gets in trouble, I think that the WHO is a great place to kind of lay that responsibility and take it off of individual countries just because one has more money or more finances or more, you know, technology to try to get everybody talking on one plan and come up with a good plan that would really help and everybody working together for one common goal.
A very good suggestion, Ashlyn. Thank you for taking time to join us on The Connection from Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Dr. Yu, I can ask you, though, about this mission to try to bring antiretroviral drugs to people. Do you feel you're going to have to take on governments there? Because, of course, the South African government under Thabo Mbeki is not convinced that this is the best way forward.
Well, I think that if compared with what they said some years ago, now that clearly also that the position has been changed, and clearly with the available drugs and other means to deal with this, the infected people, I'm sure that they will agree with us and we can convince them.
And is that the point? You'll spread this new activism to your AIDS policy as well? It won't just be getting tough on SARS, it'll be tough on other health problems as well.
Yeah, we have to build a coalition against the HIV/AIDS pandemic, which is now going on.
We'll keep reminding you, Dr. Yu, you said you were a doer. Well, let's see what other people want you to do. Ron is on the line from Ocracoke in North Carolina. Welcome, Ron.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Lee, I was just curious. I mean, I applaud your efforts with SARS and think that that was exactly the right thing to do. My only concern is where you get your mandate from to call for boycott of nations with various diseases. And SARS, while it was a good case, I can well imagine someone who could work for the WHO that might think chickenpox, just to use an extreme example, might be something worthy of a boycott. And it, where do we draw the line with these cases that the boycotts that you might impose on a nation? I mean, as long, you know, I feel fine with what we did. I'm just curious, you know, if this were to happen to me and I was to lose an awful lot of money because of your boycott, then I might feel a lot differently, and especially if I didn't perceive the disease to be all that infectious.
Thank you, Ron. Very good question. Dr. Lee?
Well, clearly that, you know, for somebody who runs a hotel business in Beijing in March or in April this year, or if you run airline in Hong Kong, clearly you feel that you would like to feel to blame WHO. But that's it. But if you look into the root of the problem, and then this is deeper than WHO, because by not issuing this guideline, but by not observing, listening to this guideline, by not taking actions, actually there will be a huge casualty in terms of the human lives. And then also that there will be economic damage anyway. So that the issue, the WHO's the guidelines' purpose was to limit the damage, the economic damage and the other damages, and to save the lives.
But where, you know, he asked, where do you get your mandate from? For example, if the United States or if the world community wants to intervene militarily, they sometimes go to the UN Security Council to get their mandate. Where do you get the authorization to go ahead?
Our mandate, in a sense, that our mandate, is, of course, comes from the 192 government, which is the member state of WHO. But in an action like against the SARS, our mandate is our truth. We are with this clearly black and white, the truth, and then the clearly people accept this. This is they all know that this is the right path to take. So that is a mandate. And we are, basically we are issuing the advice, guideline. It's whether you can take it or leave it. But but then the people see the reason to listen to and to take action. So that in a sense, our mandate is not sending out the troops, but our mandate is a truth.
But when the WHO decided to take action on SARS, it didn't consult the member states, did it? And most of them, it has to be said, who are in their arrears
WHO. We'll take weeks and months And that's not the way to deal with this emergency situation with a disease, which doesn't respect the national borders. They don't require visas. So that somebody has to take action.
And there's been no fallback from the SARS crisis member states saying to you, listen, okay, fine, we let you get away with it on SARS, just don't do it again.
Yeah, but now the member states feel that we should really do more in an organized way, of course, that there are some, but they gave us even stronger mandate during the assembly in May.
Well, Connection listeners, do you think we need this kind of activism from the World Health Body, the WHO? Our guest today on The Connection is the WHO's new Director General, Dr. Jong Wok Lee. Call us now on 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. You're listening to The Connection. Dr. Lee, do you sometimes worry that, if not to put it so crudely, but that there are sometimes fashion in diseases that a lot of people may want to give AIDS because it's very much on the public agenda, but they don't talk as much about and they don't push you as much on diseases like polio or tuberculosis?
Well, that in case of polio, that there has been a global campaign since 88, and now that only 2,700 cases were reported last year from seven countries, so that clearly that we have to complete this polio campaign, and if we really focus on this, we have a real chance to eradicate it in a matter of 2 years, so that we have to really complete this, finish this job. In case of tuberculosis, now that about 2 million people die of TB every year, but clearly HIV/AIDS and TB are intertwined disease because of lowered immunity by HIV/AIDS, then there's the hidden infection, tuberculosis, a latent infection, become a disease. So that in fact, the tuberculosis is now the major cause of death for the people who are living with HIV/AIDS. So that this is all related. And then clearly the one important issue is now that we don't talk much about HIV/AIDS in Europe and in North America because it has become a chronic disease since the drugs made available for them to keep alive for many, many years.
Well, let's take another caller. Christine is calling us from Fayetteville in North Carolina. Christine, welcome. What would you like to say about the health issues?
Well, my question for Dr. Lee has to do with mental health and what he has planned for the WHO, especially concerning children. I know that we've had a huge revelation with sex slave trade and the children who are being involved and shanghaied into prostitution across the world, and also with large numbers of children who are experiencing problems as a result of being in a war-torn country and seeing their families mutilated and bodies ripped apart in front of them. All that has to impact children, and I wanted to know what he wanted to do with mental health in that regard.
Dr. Lee?
Yes, hello. The mental health has been on big issue, and we examined the global disease burden of mental health. This is a huge problem, and one of the big problems associated with the mental health is a stigma attached to mental health. So clearly that the mental health, mental problems should be seen as like many other diseases which we can deal with treatment, with a therapy, so that one big issue is, again, dealing with the stigma attached with mental health. Because we can do so much nowadays. And then you also touched about this children issue with prostitution and child labor and trafficking. This is, of course, there are mental health aspects in these problems, but these are also related with much bigger of the problems. So that, for example, in Geneva, together with the ILO and the UNICEF, we are looking at this, and clearly education and some international attention to these problems are a very, very important issue.
Christine, are you happy with that answer?
Yes, I'm just curious what exactly his approach is going to be in terms of trying to remove that stigma that's associated with problems of mental health.
Well, that clearly that one is for us, the stigma is oftentimes is unfounded, out of ignorance of the problem. So that the clearly WHO, for example, the 2 years ago we issued a global report on mental health, that these are the problems so many people in the world has in one form or another. So that this is not just only the problems which is carried by somebody in the mental institution, but these are the problems that we are living with. So we issued this report, and we have the department dealing with this problem, and our ways are clearly making we make known to the people that what is available and how should we deal with. And then also we are sending out these messages to the government.
Christine, thank you very much for joining us on The Connection from North Carolina. Dr. Lee, if I can ask you, because there is a concern particularly here in the United States about duplication by all the different UN agencies, would you say that something like that affecting children would be perhaps the job of UNICEF and not WHO? Do all the agencies feel they have to address all the issues simultaneously?
Well, that the, in our system, that we have a division of labor. Clearly, that the UNICEF is a fund, and that they to deal with many children's issues. And the WHO, we have the department. We are the more technical agency, so that we have many more expert than UNICEF. So that together, UNICEF's ability to mobilize the fund and our technical capabilities, we make a partner, and we have to deal this problem together.
Everyone has to pull together. And what do you think the WHO should be doing? Join us here in this conversation on The Connection. Today, our special guest is the WHO's new Director General, Jong-Wook Lee, a Korean doctor, the first Korean to head a UN agency. What should his priorities be as the global disease gatekeeper? I'm Lise Doucette. You're listening to The Connection. Our number, 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. Today, we're talking about health. You're listening to The Connection. I'm Lise Doucette. Come on, Connection listeners. Do we need global health policemen when SARS and West Nile virus could be just down the street, could be in your own homes? Do we need a World Health Organization who'll stand up for us and do even more to try to protect us in our globalized world, where people can take an airplane in the morning and end up on the other side of the world within hours? Those diseases can span the globe at the same time. Call us here on The Connection, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Today, we're talking to the WHO's new Director General, Dr. Jong-Wook Lee. Dr. Lee, one of the things you said when you came in, you wanted more field workers and less bureaucracy. That must come from all the years that you spent in the field. But you've also been a bureaucrat, so you know they're thinking, just how hard is it going to be to switch the focus?
Well, clearly that I feel that, as you pointed out, I spent 10 years in the field and 10 years in the headquarters, and I feel that some of our people can be forward deployed, and they can contribute more. So that clearly that is what we have to do. I mean, there's not doing is not an option.
So what is your dream, if you like? We have the blue berets when we talk about peacekeeping, or the blue helmets. Dr. Lee might want the green helmets for fighting AIDS.
Well, we carry the blue passport, but just like the people who are wearing a blue helmet, that, for example, in the case of SARS, that our people, one medical officer who first identified that this SARS case in Vietnam, he died of the problem. He contracted from the patient. And then even yesterday, two of our staff were wounded in Baghdad. So that we are not wearing the blue helmet, but we are there are casualties among us.
You are indeed on the front line. Well, let's take another caller. Sandy is on the line from Durham, North Carolina. Sandy, welcome. What's your concern?
Thank you. I'm a medical anthropologist who has, last few years, been studying tuberculosis epidemics in the world. And I wondered if Dr. Lee would comment on the WHO's policy, perhaps changing policies with regard to TB, particularly with regard to the outbreaks in many places of multidrug-resistant tuberculosis and the new efforts of the Gates Foundation to spur interest in new funding from governments for tuberculosis.
Dr. Lee,
yes,
and you were the director of Stop TB for the WHO in 2000, so you're eminently qualified to answer this question.
Yes, I was. And clearly that this multidrug resistant tuberculosis is a big issue because it's a very incredibly difficult to treat, to cure this patient. It takes about 24 months of a daily treatment. And these medicines has also severe side effects, so it is very difficult. And in addition to this, it's very expensive. In New York, it costs almost $15,000 per year to provide these the drugs. So that in WHO, we together with private foundations and also the pharmaceutical industry, we managed to bring it down to $1,000 per year. But the issue is not the price of drugs, but the problem. So the clearly right now it is a big problem in, for example, in Russia. It is a big problem in the Eastern European country. So that in a globalized world, we cannot say this is simply a Russian problem, it's an Eastern European problem, but it can be a problem for all of us. So that it is a very, very important problem. And the Gates Foundation also spending money on, together with us, on developing new diagnostic test. Clearly, that the method that we are using is a quite old one, still a reliable one, but a very old one. So they are spending the $40 million for developing these new tools. So we are working, but clearly, as you said, this is a big problem.
Big problem, and its complexity and cost underlines again your point, Dr. Lee, about the importance of different agencies working together.
Yes, it's we have a partnerships, and so we have also global plan, business plan, and we have know that these are 22 high burden countries, so we can go not only to the country, but we can go down directly to the provinces and even cities. So
who knows?
We have a plan. We are waiting for the money. this is
let's hope we get the plan first, and then the money will follow. Thank you, Sandy, North Carolina.
It's followed. So that it's followed, but it's not enough, of course.
Good. Let's take another caller on the line from Huntsville, Alabama. Ugo joins us. Ugo, what's your concern?
Hi. I have a question about research for, or funding for research for diseases that aren't affecting many people in developed countries, that are affecting a lot of people but not in developed countries. Like, I guess it's not a very lucrative industry for pharmaceutical companies, so are there programs that the WHO is, I guess, promoting to get research, more research done in those areas?
Dr. Lee?
Yes, that as you know, that in the U.S. you have the orphan drug program, which is that there are some rare diseases, and so that industries are not interested in developing, so that you give some incentive. Orphan drug program, also globally, that there are problems which is limited to the poor developing world, so that there is no so-called market. For example, malaria is a number one killer disease in the African continent, but not many pharmaceutical companies have really shown interest in investing in development of malaria drugs because there is no market. You simply cannot afford to spend the several hundred millions of dollars and 5 to 10 years for new drug when there's a, you know that there's no market. So
that. So how will you work with those people? I mean, do you have a new idea about how to make that work?
We have this tropical disease research department, and we have this malaria drug development the venture, so that we are also attracting some venture capital money, not from the private sector, but from the World Bank and the other public sectors, so that we provide some incentive, we provide some basic money, also with some promise. When this is developed, there will be some guaranteed market. So this is one very important area of WHO and our partners. But I'm very glad that somebody raised this issue.
And Ugo. Yeah.
And also, like, I know there are a lot of universities that perform medical research, and, like, do they have any incentives? I know that, I guess, they're not in it for, I guess, as much as they're not looking for as much of a profit as the pharmaceutical companies would. So is there funding for the research that students and, I guess, researchers at universities want to do?
Well, we are also soliciting this research proposal from the universities and other the institutions, and then we provide some fund from this research fund from our the research program department. But also, I understand that this fund is available in the case of the U.S. from the NIH, so that there are some provisions that we know, and especially that for this academic the researchers, without this the funding, simply they just cannot do it. So that we are aware, and you can visit us at the WHO website.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Thank you, Ugo. And let's go from Alabama to South Carolina. Louise is calling us from Hilton Head. Louise, go ahead.
Thank you. I applaud the decision against tobacco, and I'm wondering if we might see the World Health Organization taking a stand against guns sometime in the future.
Guns, Dr. Lee, your mandate is expanding. How do you respond to that?
Yes. Well, that's clearly that the injury is a big issue, and of course that when you are injured, it's a health problem. But also the epidemic of this injury, that is one issue. But together with also that is a traffic injury and other injuries, so that we have the program dealing with injuries and the violence, and that clearly these injuries and the violence are also as a quite the heavy the burden for the health system.
Louise?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Louise. Dr. Lee does underline just how adept you have to be at many different skills. You have to be a doctor, you have to be a diplomat, you have to be a master fundraiser. Of course, it was said about your predecessor, Dr. Gro Harlem Brundtland, that former Norwegian prime minister, that when the going got tough, she could just call up her former mates who are heading countries and say, come on now, Joe, help me out with some of this money. Do you feel that is a skill that you're going to have to develop, or maybe you have it already?
Well, I hope I already have, but the issue is, you know, you cannot be an head of a WHO and spending 20 years of service for the organization without developing some political sense. So that you have to deal with all these problems, and you have to have some understanding, and you have to develop some vision, but also you have to be able to deal with all these the leaders in political community and other communities. So it's a very difficult job, yes.
And some of the questions we're asking about issues like medical research on less prominent diseases and tobacco, in all of these you have to take on the powerful corporations. Do you think the WHO and the other international agencies have it right how to work with those giants who their main priority is protecting their patents and profits over public health? Does there have to be a new approach?
Well, in case of a tobacco convention, the choice is easy. I mean, we clearly feel that the tobacco industry is producing the product which is harming and killing people, so that there's a very little room for us to work with them. But through this FCTC convention, that we want them to absorb and to also make all these warnings and the advertisement, so on, just follow the guidelines listed in the convention. But in case of other industry, for example, food industry and the drug industry, I think it will be a mistake to demonize a private industry because, for example, in the case of a research-based pharmaceutical industry, which are producing HIV-AIDS drugs, sooner or later, all these existing drugs will develop a resistance. Then who is going to develop a new ones? That is a research-based pharmaceutical industry has to develop these drugs right now. So they need the research fund, and they need also support from the organization like WHO, so that it will be a big mistake. If we demonize them, we weaken them or eliminate them, it will be like killing the goose, which is laying a golden egg. Golden egg is effective drugs. Of course, there are some profit element, but my understanding is they are also doing their part by offering this tiered pricing and other measures so that these drugs, expensive drugs, will be also available at affordable price in the developing countries. So I very much like to work with the industries.
And when you think about health, do you think not just about the deadly diseases, but about the way we live day in, day out? Because, of course, here in the United States, some of the things people worry about are diseases like obesity and the way we live and the nutrition we have. And do you think last year you got into some trouble with industry groups for saying, well, don't eat too much sugar and watch out for fatty foods.
Clearly, of course, when we got sick, we need a cure, we need a treatment, we need a surgery. But better than that is, of course, prevention. We have to take some preventable effort, such as taking blood pressure drugs. But even things which is better than prevention is a promotion, so that if we promote the healthy habit, like eating proper food and doing exercise, and so that we'll not suffer from the obesity.
Of indeed, course, a good night's sleep as well. We wish you that, Dr. Lee.
Yes.
We're very grateful to have you as our guest today, talking about all the health issues that affect us. Dr. Jong-Wook Lee, the new Director General of the World Health Organization. You also heard from Charles Piller, staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. I'm Lise Doucette. You're listening to The Connection on NPR.